You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and I am here with five cases that I think you should be following this week. But first, guys, let's talk really, really quickly about the slap heard around the world. Because I don't know about you, but my Facebook has been basically a battlefield between everyone that I know, myself included. I made a post about it, and I actually ended up unfriending four people because it just devolved into a verbal brawl. Yeah, how about Will Smith slapping the shit out of Chris Rock? I could not believe it. I saw it trend on Twitter about an hour and a half after the award show, and then saw the video from, I believe, the Japanese airing of the Oscars. But absolutely crazy. I haven't seen anything just polarize people as much as Will Smith and Chris Rock have. Full transparency, you know, I operate and a lot of my friends are in the very far left progressive circles, right? And there are usually some ideals that, you know, are in place, like use your words, not your fists. And I have never seen so many women be like, zero sympathy for Chris Rock. Smack him again. No complaints here. And, you know, others being like, there's no excuse for violence. It just got into racism and ableism and making fun of Jada for having alopecia. Other people coming and being like, that's not a disability. That should be fair game in comedy. I've just never seen something so simple turn into such a massive shit show. Has anyone else seen or had this experience on their social media with family, friends? Please let me know, because the last 24 hours have been absolutely insane. But I digress. Before we get into the cases, guys, let's just get our friendly housekeeping out of the way. You're listening to We Saw the Devil. I'm Robin. And you can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com. And from there, you can find us across all social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, so forth, as well as our Patreon. With our Patreon, for as little as $3 a month, you can financially back the show and get some cool stuff while doing it. Big news on the Patreon front, guys. So many of you may remember Jackie. Well, Jackie is back, and she's actually going to be doing all of the Patreon-only episodes with me. So for those of you who missed her, want her back, she will be alive and kicking on our Patreon. She's actually helping me with mailers and stuff like that, and she's the one who mailed out the stickers, the brand new stickers. So your prayers have been answered. Jackie is back helping with the show. Also super, super excited. In a couple days here, I'm going to be talking to our patron, Alana. She's a pathology assistant, and I love her. If you are an executive producer patron on the show, you have the opportunity to come on the show, like on an episode. And Alana is the first to do this. And she chose a case in Texas and Austin, one that's pretty well known. I threw it out on Twitter and, you know, had people guess. No one's guessed it quite yet. But she's going to come on the show and we're actually going to cover it together. And then also talk about what she does for a living. Gross, cool things that she's seen at her job. You know, it's not every day that you get to talk to someone who like cuts open tumors and cancers and analyzes things like that. We're going to be covering this case and then talking about really gross, squishy stuff. So really excited to have her on. And for all of you other executive producer patrons, hit me up and let's get your episode scheduled. All right, guys, let's just go ahead and get right into it. This week, I was probably most shocked to hear a name that I haven't heard in a very long time, and that name is Eric Smith. If you guys recall, Eric Smith murdered 4-year-old Derek Roby when he was just 13 years old. Well, he was quietly released from prison last month, and the news just now hit, I assume, to let him get released, get sorted, and get planted. But you know how there are some cases you forget about and then they just resurface in the news and you're like, damn, I totally forgot about that. Well, this is definitely one of them for me. So the case of Eric Smith. During the summer of 1993, both 13-year-old Eric Smith and 4-year-old Derek Roby attended the same camp just a block from the Roby household. Even though Eric and Derek lived so close together, they had vastly different life experiences. Derek, at 4 years old, was loved by the entire city of Savona. I mean, he made friends with everyone he met. He would stand on his front lawn and wave to people. He was adorable. Eric, on the other hand, was bullied relentlessly by his peers for having red hair, freckles, and glasses. And to most adults, he had a really foul attitude, and he was sullen and just kind of a troublemaker. Well, the morning of August 2nd, 1993, Derek had got ready to go to camp. The camp was just one block down the street, one block. He didn't even need to cross any other streets. It was literally just one block down the street. And it was also the first time that his mother was letting him walk by himself. 5 minutes later, after he walked out the door, he would be dead. Eric Smith saw Derek walking towards the camp. He lured him off of the sidewalk onto a patch of grass halfway between the camp and Derek's home. We're talking about just like half a block. There, he found two rocks, one small and one large. Eric Smith strangled Derek and then bludgeoned him to death with the rocks. He then sexually assaulted the small boy's body with a stick. After Derek was deceased, Eric Smith then went through the young boy's lunchbox. He smashed a banana, poured a box of Kool-Aid over his head, and then removed Derek's sneakers and posed them near the body. An investigation was immediately launched, and no one knew what they were dealing with. Eric Smith, again, guys, 13 years old, showed up at the police station and volunteered to help. Everyone who spoke with him recalled him being happy and upbeat, seemingly eager to help. 5 days after Derek was killed, he was buried, and Eric Smith confessed just 2 days later. On August 16th, 1994, Eric Smith was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to the maximum term then available for juvenile murderers, a minimum of 9 years to life in prison. Even by the end of the trial, no one knew why Eric had killed Derek. During an interview back in 2004, when Eric was 24 years old, he said that he's glad that he got arrested because he absolutely would have killed again. He said that he felt no remorse killing the child because it felt good to hurt someone else for a change, because he was the one always getting hurt. Now, in 2022, Eric Smith is 42 years old. And he was just released from prison last month on February 1st. He currently resides in Queens, New York, and is engaged to a female pen pal who wrote him during his incarceration. But what do you guys think? Do you believe that he should be given a second chance? Do you think that he should spend the rest of his life in prison for a murder, a heinous murder that he committed at 13 years old? It's just, I hadn't heard that name in so long. If you're into true crime and you watch a lot of documentaries or you do a lot of reading online, you have come across his photo, Eric Smith, as he was sitting in that courtroom. That is a very well-known photo of him. And hadn't thought about it in a very long time, but like hearing that he had been released after what he did, even just as a child, and then saying that he had no remorse and he would 100% kill again, we're releasing him back into society now? Okay, well, this is going to be interesting. But yeah, he was released last month, and it was just made public this week. Number two, The Staircase. Now, this is going to be something that a lot of you are probably going to be excited about. If Netflix's The Staircase got you and your family members feuding over whether Michael Peterson killed his wife Kathleen, well, HBO Max is also going to test your family relations by making a show about it as well. Creatively called, wait for it, The Staircase. Netflix's documentary series was released in 2004 and directed by Jean-Xavier de Lestrade. It was put together from more than 600 hours of video. Well, HBO is going to be a scripted series starring love of my life, Toni Collette, and Colin Firth. And I mean, wow, amazing cast. And Toni Collette is one of my all-time favorites. However, not to be insensitive, but are we beating a dead horse here? Does there really need to be a second series, you know, even if it is a dramatization of this case? So are you guys going to be watching, or are you staircased out? Heartbreaking news over the weekend out of Orlando. And full transparency, I have been so busy lately that I haven't even been keeping up with national news. I'll check in on the war in Ukraine, usually shed a tear or two, and then go back to something more uplifting. A friend actually sent me the video of this that's been circulating around. And side note, the family has in fact come out and asked that the video not be shared because, let's be honest, who wants a video of their loved one's death circulating online? I mean, this is like the case of the swimmer in Australia, the man who was horrifically killed by a great white shark like a month or two ago. I mean, the shark literally came out from under him, took him up in the air, came down, and he was in two pieces. Fishermen on the shore actually took out their cell phones. I mean, there's nothing that they could do at that point, right? But they took out their cell phones and they started recording, and you actually see like his torso floating and bobbing in the water and whatnot. And that video went viral. And I just can't fathom that level of distress that their families must feel from that. It's absolutely horrific. But 14-year-old Tyree Sampson was visiting Orlando from Missouri with his family. In the touristy district of downtown Orlando, there are two rides, and the one involved in the accident is called Free Fall. The one beside it is called Slingshot. Now, Free Fall is a 430-foot tall ride. It's billed as the world's tallest freestanding drop tower, and it just opened at the end of December. Around 11 p.m., Tyree got on the ride, and a non-rider at the bottom of the ride is taking cell phone video of all of this. They were kind of underneath it, like right in front, really good view. Now, before the ride even begins its ascent, you hear riders talking on video about how they think the seat belts are a little sus. They talk about why they aren't making clicking noises, and they say that they don't feel very secure. Now, you don't see Tyree in the video. You just hear the other riders talking. It's from a little bit further over. Now, the ride makes its ascent 430 feet up in the air. It holds, and then it falls down. It makes a stop about halfway down, and then you see someone fall right out of the seat and towards the ground, and you hear the impact. When the ride takes you down, it's a negative G-force. The shoulder clasps are literally there to keep you inside of your seat. That's all that's keeping you in there. Tyree was 6'5" and 320 pounds, and he had actually been turned around from Slingshot, the other ride. So why was he allowed to get on Free Fall at all? Someone royally fucked up. And leave it to Dolly Parton to always do the right thing. I know that is like a hard flex, right? Dollywood, Dolly Parton, back to a horrific, negligible death. But Dollywood here in Tennessee is also an amusement park, and they actually have a ride built by the same manufacturer of Free Fall. And when journalists reached out to them to ask about the weight and size issue, Dollywood said, very matter-of-factly, that the manufacturer itself claims that people of larger statures may not be eligible to ride because of the nature of the restraint systems. Basically, someone Tyree's size would not allow the shoulder clasps to fully come in, click into place, and protect him. In any case, my heart absolutely breaks for this family, everything that they are enduring, and I fully expect charges to be brought against someone. I did see that they got, I believe, Benjamin Crump as their attorney. I mean, leading civil rights attorney, first of all, but also he takes on cases like these. Especially considering Tyree's size and the fact that he was turned away from the other ride, and also that the manufacturer instructs owners and parks that people with large statures should not be eligible to ride. I mean, I honestly think that Tyree's family is going to come out. They lost him. Obviously, he cannot be replaced, but I do believe that they are probably going to win a massive, massive lawsuit. All right, so moving on to number four. In other news, if you commit a capital crime in South Carolina, you now have the choice of being put to death by firing squad. Yay! South Carolina, like many states in this country, has had difficulty acquiring lethal injection drugs. Rather than, end that pesky death penalty, Democratic State Senator Dick Harpootlian, what a name, a prosecutor turned criminal defense lawyer, introduced a bill that includes a firing squad option. Harpootlian argues that it presented, quote, the least painful execution method available. He said, quote, the death penalty is going to stay the law here for a while. If we're going to have it, it ought to be humane. Now, the death chamber in South Carolina just recently underwent $54,000 in renovations. So you're welcome, taxpayers. It now also includes a metal chair with restraints in the corner of the room. Walking you through this, inmates will now sit there if they choose execution by firing squad. The chair faces a wall with a rectangular opening 15 feet away through which three shooters fire their weapons. A hood is placed over the head of the inmate who will be given the opportunity to make one final statement, his last statement. The three shooters are all volunteers who are employees of the corrections department, and they will have rifles loaded with live ammunition. And their weapons, when this process begins, will be trained on the inmate's heart. When given the signal, they fire and it's done. Once the heart is turned into pieces, the blood pressure drops in a split second, resulting in immediate unconsciousness and ensuring death due to blood loss. Now, this actually leaves a little room for error. So just how quote unquote humane this is actually up for debate. In China, they actually use an entirely different approach to the firing squad, and it is guaranteed immediate. They actually use one executioner who shoots the victim in the back of the head at the base of the skull at point blank range. There's no pain because the nervous system is severed from the body. So shock and trauma are immediately followed by unconsciousness and death. It's all very, very interesting to me. I know that when Brittany's been on the show, pertaining to Lori Vallow, episodes pertaining to Lori Vallow that she and I have discussed and kind of joked around about the death penalty. I am personally very anti-death penalty. I believe that it should only be used actually in especially heinous crimes like big mass shootings, cases where multiple people are murdered. Say, for example, the Cheshire, Connecticut case, the home invasion and murders of the Pettit family, cases like that. But I'm very much against the use of the death penalty. And I do not exactly understand how a firing squad would make that more humane. But then if you hear or read firsthand accounts of people who have watched people die by lethal injection, it can be absolutely horrendous. And then I also had a teacher in middle school who worked as a journalist and had witnessed an actual electrocution by electric chair. And that should definitely be off the table. But I just find the entire fact that we're now in 2022 and a state had to put into law, yes, you can die by three people shooting you in the heart. It's more humane that way to be just some sort of weird fucked up statement on where we are right now. And last but not least, guys, my favorite set of news, and this is actually what I have done today. The Michelle Carter and Conrad Roy case. This has been the case, above all others, that I've wanted to cover the most on this podcast. It's also known as the suicide texting case. If you recall, it made international headlines not because Conrad Roy committed suicide, but because of what investigators found on his phone after he did. Michelle Carter was texting him and using no uncertain terms and language that he needed to get back into the car and kill himself. Texts then poured into the media, like Michelle saying, "Tonight is the night. It's now or never." Conrad Roy replied, "I'm freaking out again. I'm overthinking." Michelle Carter replied, "I thought you wanted to do this. The time is right and you're ready. You just need to do it." And it's absolutely shocking. Not even shocking. It's triggering for so many people who have struggled with a poor sense of self-worth and depression and mental health issues to read messages like what Michelle sent Conrad. I mean, some, and many actually have, called it evil. Unfortunately, somehow, two incredibly depressed and mentally disturbed teenagers found one another. And I feel like most people just saw snippets in news headlines. I mean, maybe you watched I Love You Now Die, that two-part HBO documentary that went a bit more deeply into the case. The entire thing is just absolutely shrouded in tragedy all along, from Michelle Carter being put on Prozac from when she was a young child, which that is a big pediatric and psych med no-no. You have Conrad Roy, who came from a broken home. His dad actually beat the shit out of him and charges were filed. Nasty divorce on the part of his parents. And he had multiple suicide attempts before he even met Michelle. Michelle had also been hospitalized multiple times during her lifetime, at just 17 years old. The entire thing is just so completely shrouded in tragedy on both sides from the ground up. And something that disturbed me the most is that it had a very Nancy Grace feel to it with a lot of the media coverage. You know the type. evil incarnate, tot mom, like sensationalized, villainized headlines meant to draw out emotions from viewers and readers, like clickbait. But if you really, really investigate and do your due diligence into this case, you know it's not just that simple. The most interesting part to me is the legal precedent and the ramifications and the consequences from this are just so incredibly vast. Like, it's so interesting. Well, now 8 years later, Hulu has made its own dramatized 8-episode scripted miniseries called The Girl from Plainville. It stars Elle Fanning as Michelle, Colton Ryan as Conrad, and Chloe Sevigny, love seeing her in something new finally, as Conrad's mother, Lynn. And it debuted today. They released the first 3 episodes. It debuted today, March 29th. I binge watched the first 3 episodes today. It is absolutely amazing. Now, guys, let's be honest. If you are a listener to this podcast, you undoubtedly have listened to the Pam Hupp episodes. I was so excited for the thing about Pam. Like, I mentioned that 40 times an episode for like the last 8 episodes before it aired. That show is the biggest flaming piece of shit I have ever watched. I lasted 10 minutes on episode 1. I couldn't even do it. I pulled the plug. I pulled my own plug. I pulled my own plug to charge my phone. Like, I could not continue anymore with that. Asking my friends, you know, who have managed to stick with it, they had to reframe the experience in their heads of, okay, I'm not watching this for like great Renee Zellweger acting at this point. I'm just watching this for the piece of trash that it is and enjoying it. Like, it's somehow become Love is Blind, you know, 90 Day Fiance. Like, it's no longer an actual miniseries. It's kind of reached like that status, you know, like the guilty pleasure type of thing, which is unfortunate. But The Girl from Plainfield is not that. It's very serious and they pick up the full story, both sides, all the nuance and everything. And so far, it's very, very good. But there will be 8 episodes of this, and the first 3 are now currently available. I did a little research on it to see, like, you know, did they contact Michelle Carter or Michelle Carter's family or Conrad Roy's family? At least on Conrad Roy's side, you know, his mother, Lynn St. Denis, has been very, very, very vocal and has become an absolute advocate of changing the laws surrounding coercive suicide. The producers of the Hulu show did not contact her. So apparently they're kind of like falling in line like they did Pam and Tommy or whatever. They're not contacting the people that they're actually doing shows about. Lynn St. Denis is the mother of Conrad Roy, and she has been working with lawmakers in Massachusetts trying to make them the 43rd state to criminalize suicide coercion, that it would give it an automatic penalty of up to 5 years. And the proposed bill that she's working on is called Conrad's Law. Again, the show did not contact her, and I read like one of her statements that she really hopes that, you know, they do shine a spotlight on like what she's doing or do something to make Conrad's memory worth it. That is my recommendation for the week. But that's it, guys. I just wanted to get this quick episode out here. 5 things that I'm interested in this week and share that with you. Coming later this week, I do have that long-promised episode for Lori Vallow and Suzanne Morphew, a state of the case on that, and then also my episode with our beloved patron, Alana. Again, you can find us at wesawthedevil.com, all across social media, and patreon.com/wesawthedevil. Until next crime.